Okay, so the sound has started, which means anything you say can and probably will be used against you sometime in the future. I want to welcome you to this presentation, Social Media for Journalists at the Atlantic Journalism Awards. What's the date today?
May 2nd, 2009.
Obviously, all of you know this information because you're here, but the people on the audio sometime in the future won't know this, but now they do. So hello, audio people, wherever you are, whenever you are. I'm Stephen Downs, and I'm giving this presentation, and we have a small but mighty group here of, I assume, all journalists from Atlantic Canada.
No.
Of course not. Okay. Maybe what we'll do...
An overrun as a journalist.
Got an hour and a half, so I think I'd like to take at least 30 or 40 seconds and find out who we do have then. So if you just sort of... Hi, come on in, just grab a seat anywhere. Tell me who you are, where you're from, and in a sentence or two, what you do. And I'll start at the back and work to the front. So
I'm Dave Milliken. I'm Senior VP at CNW Group and also a board member of the Canadian Journalism Foundation.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Courtney Trindle. I work at Atlantic Lottery.
We're all in communications.
Okay.
Hi.
In Moncton.
I'm Lindsay Redman, and I'm
in
the
Lottery
as well.
Okay.
The same Jennifer Belton, but I'm in the St. John's office.
Tracy Kenny, and I'm here in Moncton.
Right. Also Atlantic Lottery.
Mm-hmm. I'm Gary McDougall. I'm the managing editor of the Guardian in Charlottetown.
I'm Jerry Phelan, news director of VOCM in St. John's, Newfoundland, and a past chairman of the illustrious Atlantic Journal.
I'm Rob McCormick. I'm the smiling face for CNW Group in Atlantic Canada.
I'm Beverly Ware on the South Shore of Virgin for the Chronicle Herald and the Spanish.
Sandra Finney, freelance writer, different magazine, author.
Okay.
My name is Genevieve Orgendiel Latour. I work for Canada Post, so I'm not a reporter, but I just love communication. So well, I try to, you know.
Canada Post? Okay, that's a completely different group than I was expecting. come on in.
Journalism? Journalism? No.
This
journalism.
Is.
No.
No.
We'll just go this way.
Yeah. Oh, pox on them then.
Yeah.
Oh, they make a wall. Then take that pox back then. Come on in.
I said journalism.
There's several journalism students. Yep, come on in. And so you know, we're audio is being recorded now, so there will be incriminating evidence. And if I can get you to introduce yourself briefly as you sit down, maybe starting on the end there.
Over here, Kira Hinn, managing editor of the Telegram, St. John's, Newfoundland.
Peter Walsh, a reporter at Telegram.
Clint Mayer, I'm a reporter at CBC in St. John's.
And
So that's why you're a bit late here. You had a long ways to come from Zimbabwe. I'm just kidding. And so now we have a slightly larger but mighty group. This session is Social Media for Journalists. I'm Stephen Downs. I'll talk about that in a few moments. But just to set this up a bit, first of all, I want to know, how many of you have wireless internet access of some sort right now? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Oh, good. Okay. So what I'm going to do, I think we have enough to make this work. Those of you who have wireless access, get your access out. And Firefox, yeah. What I'm doing now is I'm setting up what's called a back channel, because I've always thought that it's unfair to have one person who's kind of in control of the communications. So I give you guys your own control over the communications. Oops. Now I should make you log in, because I've never used this computer in my life. trust him. He's got to get spammed. Why would that be? Well, that is most mysterious. It should be asking me to log in, but it's not.
Yeah, it goes straight through your site.
Oh, it's in that honest. Well, this can be pretty raunchy in a few moments. And your journalist can see it all. There's nothing I can put up on that screen that would shock you, probably.
Perhaps entertain.
Perhaps entertain, yeah. I just don't know how long this is going to go on, though. That's my Saturday night. Okay, well, that's pretty good.
We're getting better.
Yeah, we're getting worse today, so there's just a few things to stand. Although I see that my login system is not functioning. But we're getting spam this morning. I really hate spam. I hate them with a passion. All right. Well, that's going to roll through. This social media for journalists.
The guerrilla journalism?
Across the hall.
All right. There we go. We've rolled through the spam there. If you use your wireless devices and go to that address, you'll be presented with a little text area. If you type your comment into that text area and hit the submit button, what you typed will show up on that screen, as I'm sure many of you have already figured out. So I'm hoping it works reasonably well for BlackBerrys. It's originally designed for laptops, but it should work fine for BlackBerrys. It's just any old wireless internet access. So the idea here is that as I'm doing my thing, you guys, those of you who have wireless access, can do your thing and put up a comment or whatever on that screen. And if somebody else wants to comment, I hope you'll share your devices. Who shares their phone? So we'll see how that works. If it doesn't work, we'll do something differently. So we have an extra screen and an extra computer. There's no end to the stuff we can do with an extra screen or an extra computer. Oh, I should mention, too, it is anonymous, although you can put your name in, so you shouldn't really feel restrained. I like to live dangerously. This talk is social media for journalists. As you know, I like to keep this really informal. My expertise is in social media, and your expertise is in journalism, and so will require really contributions from both halves of the group here. Halves is maybe not the right word, but you know what I mean. So if you have comments, questions, opinions.
Just wanted to see if it was working.
Yeah, that's cool. Test, that's anything is on, right? I mean, you guys are self-governing here, so it doesn't, I've had this. I've done this with far larger, far more anonymous groups, and they get pretty scathing sometimes. So
now
I'm used to
it.
It's
her that's doing it, however.
Yeah.
Probably you can.
So most of you have never heard of me. I say most, hopefully. My name is Stephen Downs. I work across the street here at the National Research Council Institute for Information Technology, the Learning and Collaborative Technologies Group. So I'm a quote-unquote expert in social media, online learning, new media, things of that ilk. And what I'm most known for is my online presence. That's my beautiful face. And in particular, my daily newsletter, which I send out, it's on the subject of online learning. So I play a journalist on the internet. This newsletter goes out to about 20,000 people around the world by email, by RSS, and by web. And it's considered a leading source of news and information. I'm what they call famous on the web and unknown in my own community. Mm-hmm. And lots of people can claim to be famous on the web. I can back it up. This is Google. I have searched for, as you see, simply the word Stephen. There were many famous Stephens in the world. Stephen Colbert, Stephen Hawking, Stephen King, Stephen Harper. But when we look at Google, Wikipedia always goes to the top, and then the next Stephen is me. So I can back it up. So what I'm going to say, on one level, it's going to be pretty superficial stuff. Let me ask, how much experience do you guys have with social media? Who has lots of experience? Expert. Who has some? Okay. Who has a Facebook profile?
Oh, actually, I'm in that category, yes.
Yeah, you probably. Who uses an RSS reader? Oh, good. Some of this will be new for you. Okay. That gives me a pretty good sense of where you're at. For the people in the audio, it'll just have to be a big mystery to you how many people will put up their hands. I like leaving a little mystery in my presentations. It's a little fun. It's an interesting thing doing a presentation that's being recorded because you have two audiences, right? You have the audience in the room and you have the audience on audio. I sometimes also video my presentations, but I couldn't find my flip cam this morning. And then I have three audiences. And actually I have four audiences because I'll take these slides and I'll put them online as well. But that audience I've already dealt with when I made the slides. So anyhow, I do record all of my stuff. And here are the presentations that I have done recently. And so this is a typical presentation for me. Slides, da-da-da-da. This is one I did for the Canadian Forces in Gagetown just a week or two ago. Whoops, come back. And like I say, I'm known around the world. I did a speaking tour in Australia recently. Some more stuff online to Columbia, to the Boeing, to who else here? E-Learning Alliance in Scotland, PEI. I was over in PEI back in October, and so on. You can see a bunch of these things. So I am reasonably well known. I've done this social media thing a bit, and those are my credentials. Take them or leave them. Where I want to begin with this presentation is with the browser. And I know that seems like an odd sort of place to start, but really it's the most important place to start. Let me ask then, how many of you use Firefox as your browser? And the rest of you use Internet Explorer, right? Those of you who are using Internet Explorer should probably switch browsers to Firefox if it's possible in your environment. And if it's not possible in your environment, go to your computer services people or whatever and tell them to switch. And there's a bunch of reasons to switch to Firefox. It being faster, it being definitely more secure, it being free and open source software and all of that. But also too, if you use Firefox, you'll have access to Firefox add-ons, and there are hundreds, thousands of Firefox add-ons. Firefox add-ons do, well, basically everything. I use a smallish set because I'm a bit of a purist, but these are the add-ons that I use. Firebug, which corrects my web coding. GreaseMonkey, which is an add-on that enables other add-ons, which is kind of weird. But what GreaseMonkey does is it allows you to use add-ons that change the way any web page is displayed. You don't like the way they've designed Google, use GreaseMonkey with a Google adapter, you get a different version of Google. I could spend an hour talking about that. Error Console, because I make lots. Page Info, just gives me page information, and so on. There are add-ons, actually, one's missing. I also use an add-on, I don't seem to have it running on this version, called AdAware. It basically screens out all of the advertisements on different web pages. Those of you who use Internet Explorer, you really do use a different internet than I use. You use an internet that's filled with advertisements. I use an internet that isn't. those of you who are in advertising, you ought to know that if you're doing online advertising, you're probably reaching Internet Explorer people and not so much Firefox people, because the Firefox people are screening out their online ads. Do I want to do that? No. I'll come back to that. So there's various add-ons. Picnic is an image editor. LastPass is a password manager. And so on. There are hundreds and hundreds of Firefox add-ons that you can use. And what I would recommend is install Firefox, go to the add-ons, and just explore.
Just a quick word on Picnic. Is that I used that once and I felt unsafe that there was going to be stuff getting planted onto my hard drive and you're going to go into my computer and all that stuff. Is that a trustworthy site?
I believe Picnic is. I've used Picnic myself a number of times. I use it, though I use the web version of it that I access through Flickr. And actually, I have a slide on that a bit later. In general, these online sites and services are more or less trustworthy. Generally, they're trustworthy. It's when you download and install software on your own machine that you really run into difficulties. Hi, come on in. Be welcome.
So even by using the Picnic online interactive to dress up a photograph that you have, you're not giving them permission to then come into your hard drive and access all your photos?
No.
And just put them all those up on the internet?
Typically, no. Now, again, it's going to vary. If you're using Internet Explorer, anything is possible.
Firefox on a Mac?
Firefox on a Mac, you're fine. Yeah, you shouldn't have any issues. If you do have issues, search for it. Picnic, Firefox, Mac, Mac. Malware. So, there's some OS malware, but that's not Picnic. Let's force it to use Picnic. So we'll put a little plus in front. Force the Picnic results, and I'm not seeing any sign of malware in the Google search. So it's reasonable to conclude that there is none, because if there was, it would be reported within about 30 seconds of it being detected. So, you know, that's just as an aside, that's the Web 2.0 way, right? If you need a fact, it's on the internet. You're probably already aware of that, but it's really important to emphasize that. I want to back up, actually, now. Previous. Because you may have wondered why I have facts on the front. Because I'm mostly talking about social media for journalists, but which means I'm mostly talking about social media, but I wanted to have one bit of thing that is of direct relevance to journalists. And I thought about it, and I went and searched through a bunch of social media for journalists sites and presentations and stuff, and I really wanted to boil it down into something. I'll just boil it down. And what I came up with was this. And this is the one theory bit in the whole presentation. And the theory bit is from the triangle to the circle. That's for the benefit of the audio people here who might not be looking at the slide. The triangle is the past. The circle is the future. The triangle is also a pyramid, and the pyramid is probably at the core of journalism, certainly of journalistic writing. And what I'm trying to emphasize with this is that what social media brings to the picture is a change in emphasis from organizational structures that are pyramid in nature to organizational structures that are more circular, or if you will, more network-like, more distributed, more unfocused, things that don't necessarily have a point. This is going to apply across the board. And so I'm going to want to, and if I forget, remind me, I'm going to want to return to this metaphor as I talk about the different technologies. So, for example, take browsing. browsing on the internet, the old way is you have your browser, that is your access point to the internet, right? You have the best, the one thing that you use to access the internet. The new way is you have a browser, but it's a little bit different for every person. Everybody's browser is different. They have their own add-ons, they have their own tools, their own way that they've set up their online browsing. But also to even, we come back to the browser, we have the browser where you by yourself blog, but then there's an alternative browser also based on Mozilla. Mozilla is the engine that runs the Firefox browser, called Flock. And what's neat about Flock is you're browsing not by yourself, but with a number of other people. As you browse, what you browse is shared with other people and vice versa. So again, we have this sort of scattering that takes place, this moving away from the point, which is yourself, into an environment that is more of a network, less centralized, less specific. So have I convinced you to use Firefox yet?
Do you have any idea what the percentage would be in people Firefox versus Explorer?
I can find out.
Just ask Google.
Well, this is the thing, right? Now, we don't have to guess anymore. Here we go. Growth rates slip for Firefox usage. That's not right. So, okay, Internet Explorer 89%. That really seems wrong to me. Firefox 5.7. What's the date on this?
It's 2005.
2005, all right. Google's really not good at sorting research results, search results according to date. Well, okay, never mind. I'm not going to find it in the 3 seconds I have at the moment. But it's about 30% for Firefox, and it's about 55% for Internet Explorer. Firefox, I need to get this right, Firefox 3, which is the new Firefox, has just passed the newest Internet Explorer 7. So... but they're each down around 30% or so. One of the things with Firefox, people tend to update regularly, so you don't have very many legacy copies of Firefox out there. If somebody's using Firefox, they're almost certainly using 3 or the very most Firefox 2. Hardly anyone using Firefox 1. Internet Explorer users don't tend to update so much, so we have all these legacy Internet Explorer browsers around, and they're using browsers that were made in the 1990s and that. It's just, again, it's a different sort of thing. It's people who, once they upgrade, they tend to upgrade to Firefox, and they don't upgrade Internet Explorer so much. That will probably change with the new automatic updating systems, though. Okay, that's the browser. It's pretty basic. Not too exciting, I know. But we needed to start there, because it's the common ground, right? So, next is the RSS reader, and this is the bit that's going to be new to a lot of people. So, what is RSS right off the bat? Well, let me show you some RSS, and we'll take it from there. I'll go to my home page, and I'll go to my RSS feed, and I'll open it up, and this is RSS, real live RSS. What it is the content of the web page rendered in a specific programming language. It's a little hard to see from the back there, but really all it is a tag and an angle bracket, and then some text, and then the closing tag and an angle bracket. You actually don't generally need to know the content of RSS. The main thing about RSS that you need to know is that it is a machine-readable representation of the content of a web page. So what this RSS is, basically, is this. This is the content of my web page. This is my newsletter. These are newsletter articles. each of the newsletter articles with the title, and when I click on the title, I can go to one of my newsletter articles. All of my newsletter articles are really short because I have no imagination. Many people use RSS for their blog posts. People's blog posts tend to be longer. I also have a blog, so I'll show you the RSS for that as well. So this is my half an hour blog. So let's go into the RSS, and as you can see, the RSS for this one is a bit longer. This is what's called a full feed. Sometimes people just take the first paragraph of their article and they share only that in the RSS feed. And that's called an abbreviated feed. Readers hate them, and I'll explain why readers hate them in just a moment. So now we have RSS. As the slide indicates, you can recognize RSS by this symbol. That's the universal RSS symbol.
What's the value of adding this?
You don't actually add, well, you can, but you don't actually add this symbol. If you have an RSS feed, then up in the top of somebody's browser window, if they're using Firefox, there will be the little RSS symbol. You see it up there? It's kind of hard to see. When you click on that symbol, that will reveal the RSS file or the RSS feed for that page. And for those of you who love technicalities, there's always someone in the room, the way you make that symbol appear is you put in that line of code. Sorry, I know it's kind of small. Link rel equals alternative type equals application / RSS plus XML, title equals RSS, and then the URL of the RSS feed. So that will tell your browser where to find the RSS feed associated with this page. Make sense so far?
Not quite. Tell me about how, why I want to click on that on somebody's webpage.
Yeah, good question. Very good question. Why would you want to do that? Well, because what you have done is you've set up something called an RSS reader. So, the RSS reader that I currently use is Google Reader. Oops, and I'm not signed in. I'll just sign myself in. This is my RSS reader. This is how I keep up with the news that I use to populate, well, my newsletter, my blog, and everything else I do online. On this left-hand side here are my subscriptions. Each one of these subscriptions corresponds to a blog or to a website out there. And I've organized them in categories just for convenience. Cyberculture, which is fairly obvious. Edubloggers, because that's the field that I'm in, is online learning. Media, and actually I have more than two media feeds. These are just the feeds that have been updated recently. I can display all of the feeds. Let's show all of the feeds. So we'll go back down to media again. It's a bit further to get to this time. Here we go. So these are the various media feeds that I read on a regular basis. And today being Saturday, they're all off at home doing whatever, or they're at conferences. So there hasn't been very much updated, but Columbia Journalism Review is updated today. So I click on CJR, and as you can see, they have a horrible, ugly, abbreviated feed, which means I can't simply just read it there. I have to click on it and read it there. where they will try to force me to read some advertising too, but since I'm using Firefox, it's blocked. You sort of begin to get the picture and the attitude, right? And how all of these things kind of hang together. So, okay, what's the big deal, you may ask? Well, the big deal is I did not check this site, this site, this site, this site, this site, this site, and this site before getting to this site because they weren't updated today. I didn't have to waste time going to a site and checking to see if anything has been added to it. Whatever is new on the site is available, is displayed here. And more to the point, all of my sites, all of my subscriptions, I subscribe to about 500 or 600 sources, all of those are available right here in this same interface. So for me to check the news, I'll check my email first, typically, because I'm an old fuddy-duddy and I still use email. And so that takes me 5-10 minutes because there's not much that comes through an email. You know, a few legacy mailing lists, some stuff like that, some press releases, whatever. Then I'll pop over to my RSS feed, and in a typical day, I'll spend half an hour to an hour on my RSS feed gathering stuff. And so I gather stuff. I read through, I'll put this back down to show updated. So I might read Michael Geist, who's at the University of Ottawa, who's an expert on copyright.
So you've essentially created your own electronic newspaper on the topics that you want to follow. How often do you create new topics and new information? Suppose you wanted now to suddenly start following the flu story.
Sure.
Would you be following it on an RSS feed that you're getting from a conventional media point, or would you do something else?
I would probably do something else. I would do something else that ends up feeding into my RSS reader. I would do a variety of things. And that's actually going to presume a bunch of the slides. But let's sort of hang on to that thought. But yeah, absolutely.
So just on this point, though, electronic newspaper, if I come to your website and I'm impressed with your electronic newspaper,
right,
I can pretty well come there every day, and I say, Stephen Downs, he's got his act together, he's got the information I want every day. I don't even have to bother with my own, I can just go to his.
That's right. So what you would do, well, I mean, there's a couple of things, right, a couple of things that happen here. Nobody wants to read all of this because I already read it, right? You want to read your own stuff. And so what I'll do, and this is typical of people, is I'll take the stuff out of this that I think is important and I'll highlight it in some way. The way I do it, usually, is to put it in my newsletter. I can share this feed or this list of feeds, and the way I do that is I hit the Manage Subscriptions button here and then wait. Okay. Export. Export. Export your subscriptions as an OPML file. And so I click on that little button there, and that's going to. That wants to save it. I wanted it to just open it. But this won't take any seconds. So this is the export. This is an OPML file. It's a lot like an RSS file. It's the same kind of thing, right? It's XML. Now, if I took this OPML file and I saved it to my own desktop, then in the same screen, I can select an OPML file and import it, and then your RSS reader would look exactly the same as my RSS reader. You'd have all of the same sources. Now, but for that to happen, I have to export my RSS, my OPML file. So I actually have to take that action. You can't simply go into my feed because this is my feed. This is my RSS reader, my account. It's secure to me. So nothing goes out of my account unless I share it. So what I've done, in fact, what I've done, in fact, is on my website, I've taken my OPML and I've put it online, and there it is. So www.downs.ca/opml.xml. You can access my OPML, but I had to do that manually. There isn't a direct way of doing that.
But if I want to start my own, if I want to do what you did and, mm-hmm. and put the news that is of interest to me on a regular basis, where should I start? Which site should I use
sure.
to create my categories? And
that's always, yes, the chicken and egg problem, isn't it? Yeah, it looks really easy when you already have 800 feeds. It's less easy when you have none. But the place to start, the place to begin, is with your RSS reader. So we go to our RSS reader. Say that carefully. I have it bookmarked, of course. So the first thing, let me sign out here. And we'll see how this works, right? So here's what it looks like when you don't have an account, and all you do is create an account. Many of you may already have a Google account if you use Google Calendar or Google Docs or whatever, but if you don't, it's one of these things that's really simple to create an account. If you don't want to be part of the Googleplex, then Bloglines is another RSS reader that you can use, and that works equally well. And in fact, there's a whole bunch of RSS readers out there. Many of them are web-based, like Google and Bloglines. Others are applications that you can download and install on your own computer. And there are advantages and disadvantages to each. But I choose Google right now. And this is one of these things that changes from time to time. But right now, it's the best of the bunch. But you don't really need to feel like you're locked in, because since you can export your OPML list, you can easily migrate from one RSS reader to another simply by moving your OPML file. This is one of these things that sounds really complicated now, but it's one of these things that it gets a lot easier once you've done this and practiced with it for a while. The main thing is set up your RSS reader. Create an RSS account somewhere, probably on Google Reader, but Bloglines or wherever. So you've created your account. So I'll sign in. Email. As you can see from the sign in, I actually have various identities that I use. Well, I'm like that. Yeah, this is, again, the triangle circle, right? The idea that a person has one identity, one name. Now we have several. We pick and choose whatever identity we want, and that's normal. Okay, so pretend this is a completely empty RSS reader. Now what? Well, I've gone to a site that's interesting and informative. I click on this. And now, Firefox gives me the option to subscribe. There are various ways to subscribe. Here's Bloglines, My Yahoo, Google, and any other RSS reader that you may have an account with or installed will show up there. Or you can subscribe right in Firefox itself with a thing called Live Bookmarks, or you can actually choose an aggregator that it doesn't detect. And so then you hit the Subscribe Now button, and Google adds this extra step, because Google has the iGoogle, which it's going to abandon anyways, but the iGoogle homepage or the RSS reader, most just go straight to the reader. So you pick the RSS reader, add to Google Reader, and then it subscribes you, and it's that simple. So you can easily migrate from just your ordinary browsing behavior to RSS by just browsing the sites you normally browse and hitting on that.
Just wondering about searches. So would you sign up for, say if I want to do a search every morning for our company or for, I don't know, say I want to news on swine flu or whatever
yeah.
it is. Can I, the best way to do that is that to sign up for Google Alerts, or like, how would you because I just recently signed up for Google Reader, but I'm just not really sure how to set up all my different alerts and topics and all that stuff so that stuff automatically comes to me every day, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and you totally want stuff to automatically come to you every day. I mean, that's the way it works.
No, in this time, they're kind of searching for
blogs. So, don't forget that question.
How quick is this? For example, if you're a reporter and covering a beat and you set up a whole series of RSS feeds to sites and information sources that could be valuable to you and being a reporter and reporting on it, how quick is this information coming
in? Very fast, like within the hour, probably
within
faster.
The hour.
Oh, yeah. Typically, an RSS reader will harvest websites once an hour. That's the normal. What happens
is there anything faster?
Pardon?
Is there anything any faster? An hour could be too
There is long. Faster. Yeah, we'll get to that. All right. Let's remember both of those questions. Mm-hmm. Just one thing before we leave this RSS reader is, of the people you have subscribed from, there are searches that you can do. So, actually, let's search for myself. So these are things that have shown up in feeds, various feeds that refer to me. So of those, if you have a good long list of subscriptions and you want to find out who wrote about such and such today, you can use that search. And that'll search all your subscriptions. Because what happens, right, you read something, so fanatics, you read the article, now I've read the article, now it's gone, right? Because it only shows the stuff that's unread. So the search is really useful for finding stuff you've already read, and then it's gone away, and the search will bring it back up again. Okay, let's keep all of that on the table, but let's move on a wee bit.
One final question, Steve. This is all private unless I choose to put it on a blog and invite everybody else to read what I'm reading.
Sorry, say that again?
This is all private on my computer unless I choose to put it on a blog and say.
That is absolutely right. Yeah, nobody else sees this. So this is unique to you. You have to actually make a decision to broadcast it or to share it. In Google, there is a share button for any given article that you see. You can share it. So, the next thing in your set of social media tools is your blogger. How many of you blog right now? One. Mm-hmm. You should blog. And now you might think, well, why should I blog? There's many reasons why you should blog, but the main reason why you should blog is putting the stuff that you are interested in into a blog and posting it online is the unparalleled best way of attracting stuff that you're interested in to you. So, and I can illustrate that in half a dozen ways. Let's illustrate one really, really quickly and easily here. My site is downs.ca, and I post stuff online, and then people link to it. Who links to stuff that I post online? Well, people who are interested in the same thing I am. So I post stuff online. Now, by using this link search, I can find all the people who have linked to stuff that I've posted online. I now have a customized list of people who are interested in the same thing I'm interested in. Similarly, if I post stuff online, then what I do, I hope I haven't read these already, is I subscribe to my own RSS feed. And here's my own RSS feed in Google Reader. You might think, well, that's pretty egotistical. Well, I don't actually read my own RSS feed. But when I was just starting out, the only thing I had subscribed to was my own RSS feed. So think of the dynamics here. I've typed stuff that I'm interested in. I've put it in my blog. then I've subscribed to that, and now I'm subscribed to my own stuff in my RSS reader. That gives my RSS reader the information that it needs. Go back to the home page by clicking on the logo. To give me recommendations. The recommendations are based on the content of the stuff I've subscribed to. So, I've written about stuff that interests me. That's what I subscribed to. The stuff that interests me is the basis for the recommendations that Google is giving me. And so now, here are things that Google is recommending to me that are similar to the things that I subscribe to. And it tells me how many subscribers there are and the like. So those are just a couple of ways right off the bat of finding things that are interesting to me by first putting things that are interesting to me online. And this is one of these things, we're back to this circle again, right? This is one of these things that snowballs. The more you put stuff that's interesting to you online on your blog, the more stuff that's interesting to you will start to find you and come to you. Now, why isn't that displaying? Okay. The two main blogging sites are Blogger and WordPress. There's also a WordPress.com. Blogger is a hosted service. It's online. WordPress.org is software that you can download and install on a web server of your own. And if you don't want to do that, then you go to WordPress.com and you can create an account there. Creating a blogging account is dead simple. And there we go. Whoops. That's not what I had in mind at all. Right. It's funny, there's about a half second to a second lag on the internet here that I'm not used to. It just throws me off. So let me just sign out here. So to create a blog, you just click the big create a blog, type in your email address twice, give yourself a password, give yourself a display name. It'll tell you whether or not it's unique. Try to fool the computer and then accept the terms of service, which gives Google your house. I'm just kidding. And then basically that'll set up your blog for you. It's that simple. You just fill in the form and your blog is off and running. Once you've set up the account, now I have to sign in again because I had signed out. Oh, come on, you're supposed to remember that. You can actually create any number of blogs. I've created a whole bunch of them. And then to create a new post, it's very simple. So, and I'll publish that. It's that simple. And you can publish really useless stuff like the post that I just published, and there it is.
Stephen, does the world really need another bad blogger? There's so many, you know, and it's dribble.
Yeah.
I know that's an illustration, but that is the level of the quality of posting sometimes.
The world doesn't need another bad blogger, but, very importantly, the world doesn't care if there is one. So it doesn't matter to the world that I've just posted a really useless blog post. Doesn't matter. Because it's only going to show up to people who subscribe to me. People who subscribe to me are used to it. And it takes less than a second for this to come into and fade out of their view. So, and you know, they won't even see it, probably. So it doesn't matter. Now, that said, the world needs, I think, lots of blogs. And it's this triangle to circle thing again. It used to be the case that knowledge, properly so-called, or learning, or information, or news, or whatever, could be obtained from, if you will, the peak. Business executives, labor leaders, politicians, spokespeople for NGOs, advertisers, you know the group, right? That's no longer the case. Today, everybody has a legitimate voice. And the reason why that is we get a better picture of news, events, knowledge, facts, etc., when we get everyone's voices as opposed to those who are at the peak. Because everyone's voices are looking at these things from multiple points of view, multiple perspectives. Each blog in itself is probably pretty stupid. Even mine, I admit it. But the blogs taken up together as a totality give you multiple ways of looking at the same thing rather than a focused and necessarily opinionated way of looking at it from one or two or a handful of specific points of view. Does that make sense? You don't have to agree with it, but that's the theory.
I get what you're saying there, but I'm just wondering about if I set up a blog and I'm writing every day or however often I write, who's going to find me? Like, is it just people that search my name, or do you put search, how do you...
Almost certainly not.
Okay. How would I have certain... Yeah. If I'm writing on a certain topic, then people would search that topic and come to me?
Yeah.
Or how does that work?
There's a wide variety, and I've actually written a paper called How to Be Heard, which covers this topic. So if you search for How to Be Heard, Downs, you'll find it. But basically, there's a number of strategies that people follow in order to ensure that their blog is found or seen. And even if they don't follow these strategies, there's a number of ways it will be. And there's two major ways. First way is you'll advertise it. And there's a bunch of ways to do that. Put it on your business card. Sign your blog at the your blog URL at the bottom of your emails, post comments to other people's blogs and use your own blog URL, etc., right? Mm-hmm. And then secondly, people find it through the content. All these things that we talk about here of how to find sources will also find you. And the more precise they're looking at, the more precise you've written about a particular topic, the more likely they are to find you. The likelihood of you being found varies, you know, again, according to precision, according to reputation, according to volume. Google also tends to favor its own site, so if you use Blogger, you'll get a bit of a bump. So all of these things will lead to your site being found.
Right,
and it will be found.
Which goes back to why, when we write Stephen in the Google search bar, why you come up number two. So are you doing all of these things plus,
Okay. The theory that describes why I end up number two is social network theory. It was described by people like Duncan J. Watts, Alfred Laszlo Barabasi, and others. And really, it has to do with my connectedness to other people on the internet. I am highly connected. I haven't done great things like Stephen Hawking has. I haven't written great books like Stephen King. I haven't done anything, but I'm really connected. And because I'm connected, that gives me an advantage when people search. When people are looking for things that I am talking about, I tend to show up higher because more people out there have linked to me. So the activities that I've taken in order to make myself connected are the things that have given me the authority and influence on Google. And those activities, the first and foremost one I'm saying in this talk, is my blog. That's where it all began. I began by putting my stuff online. And the social network theory also says that the people who do this first have an advantage. And that's certainly the case in my case. My website went online in 1995.
How hard do you have to work? Is it like a race to stay as high as you were? Like if you suddenly stopped typing for I don't know what period of time.
I've taken a hiatus in the past of a month, and it still stays pretty constant for the period of a month, because everything I've typed is still there, right? All the stuff I've put in the past is still there. So over time, I'm going to drop, right? Stephen King hasn't been writing a lot recently. He's, you know, and Hawking, nothing. He's nosediving. No, I'm just kidding. But you know what I mean. I mean, you do have to keep up a presence, but it's not, you know, if you stop tomorrow, you're going to drop right away in the rankings in Google. Your past work creates a legacy, for sure. And that legacy is what carries your weight on Google.
So there's no relationship between someone who was well-connected and therefore at the top of the list and substance?
Virtually none. Seriously. I don't want to say it that simply, because it's really, really hard to be at the top of the list without substance, because nobody will link to you. But that said, what counts as substance is really, really ephemeral. And I'll prove that to you. This is one of the most popular sites on the internet right now. ICANHASCHEESEBURGER.com. It consists of what are called lolcats. And a lolcat is an image, generally, of a cat with some text. I had a happy, but I squished it. And the text is typically written in mangled English. Taken collectively, these are a scream. So much so that I subscribed to them. So, quality, substance, it's really kind of subjective term. It used to be there was a definition of quality and you had to have it or you were nothing. Now, what counts as quality really varies a lot. And I would argue, and I could give you lots of good reasons for arguing, this is quality. It's a different kind of quality, but it's nonetheless quality. And even if, whether or not it's quality, it's a scream. These things are hilarious. So, you see how I have to sort of, and again, point to circle. There isn't a nice, short, sharp, simple answer to that kind of question. There used to be, now there isn't. So there's going to be lots of equivocation, lots of fudging, lots of ambiguity in any sort of answer. As an aside, I go to the aside, this is one of the hardest things to find in journalism today is any sort of tolerance for this kind of ambiguity. Journalists, it seems to me, are always looking for this was the cause, this was the person responsible, this is the expert, this is the person we talked to, this is the lead. They're always looking for this short, sharp thing that capsulizes the story, that is the answer. But our world has shifted in such a way as to move to something that is very complex. It's capsulized in something called the Cynefin framework, which is a horrible, horrible name. The world used to be, at the very least, simple and sometimes pretty complicated, but with many more variables, many more people, many more bits of information, many more communications channels, many more everything, we've crossed the boundary into a world that is complex. In the world of complexity, simple causes, simple effects, simple answers no longer apply. And indeed, it is misleading and mistaken to identify simple causes, simple explanations, to identify a single person. And anything that's online today, if you identify a single person who was the creator of that thing, you have uttered a lie, because there is no longer a single person that creates anything. Sure, people still get credit, mostly in the media, but seriously, anything that's online was the result of a large combination of things that happened to come together a little bit in that person. End of aside. Sorry.
You, in many ways, you embody what mainstream journalists despise of what's going on right now. You block out your ads, you just... This is the stuff that's putting us all out of business, right?
Yeah, sorry.
And you're the parasite who, you know, I'm the guy who goes on interviews people and does the legwork, right? So what's your... I'm just curious your take on that. People despise what you're doing.
I'm the guy who actually makes news. You guys... come talk to people who make news. News people don't make news, or at least not intentionally, although sometimes they do. But they go talk to newsmakers, right? What's happening now is newsmakers themselves broadcast online. And so your role changes. Your role must change, because people who make news, like I invent software, I give talks, I write papers, I go to conferences, right? I do the kind of stuff that makes news. Well, not much news, but that's the way it is, right? And my news I put online directly. I don't need, thank goodness, to depend on the Times and Transcript for people to find out about what I'm doing. Because if I did, nobody would know. Nobody in Moncton knows, because they do depend on the Times and Transcript. So your role changes. And your role changes into something that is like what I do with my newsletter, and that is to become connected. And to become connected, it's incredibly important to stop thinking of the news that you create as this thing that you'll hold back until people give you money. It's going to be the news that you create is the thing that you share. That is what creates the connections. Speaking of which, no problem. I always tell people, leave your cell phones on. If I can't compete with a cell phone, I shouldn't be able to. It's from those connections that you're going to derive your income, whatever that income may be. Maybe it'll be with journalist organizations, maybe not. A big part of it is what CNW is doing. What you guys are doing in lotteries is using this media as a communications channel. So you are hired by your agency, your organization, to inhabit new media and to have certain messages, say certain things in that media. I do research, write software, blah, 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 blah. Part of my job is to do that work in an open way so that people can learn about it.
But are you concerned that you're an expert? You're an expert in computers and filtering and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
For the everyday person who wants to find out what's going on in such and such place, they need to be an expert to bypass us traditional media people who survive.
All they need to know is the content of this presentation. And then they don't really need the newspapers and radio anymore.
You're a dangerous man.
But in many ways...
Sorry.
I don't disagree with anything you're saying, but in many ways, your virtuous circle there is very much the old chicken and the egg, right? The internet, whereas, I suppose, if we're talking about newspapers, at one point in time, they were sort of the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Something arrived at your doorstep or your place of work, and it was filled with storylines and different issues, right? That was never before.
Absolutely.
A single issue before. Now, the internet, to me, is becoming so much information for in the hands of someone like yourself, that your average Joe or Josephine at the coffee shop is almost overwhelmed by the information that's coming from.
Yeah, except they're not. That's just it. I mean, even look at this environment with information pushing its way in the form of cell phone rings.
Sorry for that again.
No, that's fine.
I was looking for direction.
Yeah. It's like our attitude toward this information shifts and changes. Douglas Rushkoff used the metaphor of surfing, very appropriate now, but he wrote it before it was famous. We don't consume it anymore. We don't internalize it. And this is true of knowledge, learning, as well as news, right? Nobody reads even a newspaper cover to cover. Well, not nobody, but most people. And this is even more the case with the internet. We simply browse, we pick, we choose. I subscribe to all of those web feeds. If I'm on a plane for 24 hours, I get off the plane, I just mark all as read, and they slip by unread because it would be impossible to catch up to them, right? So, and that's what people do. People sort of step lightly through this information environment, picking and choosing, but not worrying about missing it. And they stay connected with their social network, and there's still some things to talk about there, that in such a way that if they missed something here and it was important, it'll come up. People don't miss important things because they're connected. So they're not so dependent on that single source. The important stuff is going to come at you a whole bunch of ways.
But are there jobs lost? I mean, it's fine, change is happening. Mm-hmm. And all that, but what's not replacing the issue right now for everybody here is just the economic model has kind of crumbling.
Yeah.
And so it's great that you can jump to date, but can people work and have jobs?
The economic model of publication is crumbling. Of that, I think there is no doubt. Same thing's happening in music. Even more so. Same thing's happening more slowly in education and any of these content-based kind of disciplines. And what's happening is the intermediaries are the ones mostly losing out. The intermediaries being those that report, those that teach, those that play, if you will. But what's happening is, like, the productive value of all of this stuff hasn't disappeared. Productive value is a really awkward way of saying it, but you know what I mean. People still want news. People still want information. People still want music. So all of these things are still the case. And, more to the point, people are still producing these things. So it's the distribution that's changing.
Broadcast has become a narrowcast.
Broadcast has become a narrowcast, for sure.
We've been talking about two different things here today. Mm-hmm. One is how we as users find information on the internet and get it kind of tailored to us so that it comes to us.
Right.
And then there's the other area where we as, whether we're companies or media outlets or whatever, we can use social media to our benefit to drive people to us. So whether that's mm-hmm. on our websites, you know, adding comments or RSS feeds or blogs or whatever that might be. And I might be jumping ahead, so stop me if I am, but I'm wondering if you can leave us with like a few kind of baby steps if we're going to start diving into this area in mm-hmm. order to kind of increase traffic and drive people yeah. to our websites or to our companies or outlets, whatever that may be. What do you recommend for us to start with?
I'm not even sure driving traffic is the model that's going to work anymore, because with the internet, when you drive traffic to your website, you increase your own expense. It's really expensive to run a high traffic website. The cost of bandwidth, the cost of servers, a high traffic website will attract an exponentially greater number of hackers. So it's not going to be the case, probably, that you're going to be able to create a good revenue stream by driving a lot of traffic to your site. And even, you know, you think about it, the mechanism for making money when you've driven people to your site is what? Advertising? That's the model now, right? Advertising and subscription fees. Nobody's paying subscription fees. Well, that's not true. There's some places where I just paid, what was it, $14 for a year's worth of baseball games, every major league game being played this year I can listen to, and I've listened to a pile of them. $14. Nobody's going to retire on that. So there's a few things you can charge money for, but mostly people won't pay. Advertising, that advertising that's being blocked, that isn't being blocked, that is getting through, is producing lower and lower revenues. Because there's an unlimited, literally unlimited page space for it. The more content you have, the more traffic that comes to your site, the more pages you're creating, the more advertising space there is to fill, the less advertisers are going to pay for any little bit of it. So advertising, unless you're Google or maybe Yahoo, although that's questionable, you're probably not going to make a huge income on advertising.
Maybe so, not advertising. I mean, I guess that's not really what I was talking about. I think it's more about, building your reputation or being out there more so that people will go to the Chronicle Herald because they saw something on Twitter or they saw something on a blog. I mean? Not about advertising, but building your brand, your reputation, driving people to your media source or your company or whatever that may be.
Well, what I try to do, I don't want people to go to my website.
Right.
I don't have the time. I can't afford that. Right? Same thing with the Chronicle Herald. And this is just it. If people are going to the Chronicle Herald, somehow the Chronicle Herald's going to have to monetize that. Otherwise, their servers will crash. Right? So the only way to have an audience is to get your stuff from your website and out into the community. And then the thing that you're monetizing is not your website, it's not even your content, it's your connections, it's your knowledge, it's your insight, it's your demographics, all of this sort of stuff. That becomes what you're selling. And so you're not selling to your customers anymore. You're sort of not even selling to your advertisers anymore, although you are a little bit, but you're providing market intelligence, for example, for product developers. You're providing expertise to people who want to do the same sort of thing. You're doing things like I'm doing here, except getting paid for it.
Right. Because, from what I understand, if I'm going to look for information on social media and I do a search and I see your name and I see someone's name that I've never heard of before, obviously I'm going to go to you because we've had a connection, we've established, I know your name, we have a relationship. So kind of more along those lines, getting your name out there, building the relationship and the trust, and that's how you differentiate.
You build a relationship, you build the trust, it's about the community, it's about the connections, it's about the network, and then the revenue-producing activities of that network that people participate in, whatever they might happen to be. For a musician, well, it's not selling albums so much as giving shows these days. For a lecturer, it's giving lectures. For writers, it might be custom writing for people, whatever, right? Those revenue-producing activities you end up sharing in with your community. So, and again, it's the business model itself will change quite a bit. And it's not going to change next week or even 5 years from now, but 20 years from now, it will have changed quite a bit. The business model now is the one where you work for the publisher and then the editors and section, it's all organized in a typical hierarchical pyramid. In the future, people who are working in media will work much more as independent agents within a network. And even if it's organized in a company, the organization within that company will be like that. It's already moving in that direction. It's a direction that we see, for example, more and more, well, we've always seen it in the sciences, but in many other areas. Actually, as an aside, what's happening in the sciences as government managers get involved is they try to push it more and more to that hierarchical model, which is exactly the opposite to the way it should be going. But that's an aside.
Are you aware of the newspapers or magazines that are using that circular model or doing that have a model more in line with what you're talking about?
Right now, no. There have been experiments. Dan Gilmore, for example, with his back fence, tried to make one work and failed. Existing media is moving very tentatively into it, but very tentatively is the word. The Thompson Transcript only recently, for example, allowed open access to their content. And as far as internal organization goes, I think people would have to retire before things change in there. And I think that's more or less true across the board. What we're seeing are alternative media organizations. Gawker is an example of such an organization. And the site called the Blog Herald will cover a lot of these things. So you're not seeing it in traditional media that much. You're seeing it outside traditional media. What the pattern has been so far is people make a name for themselves outside traditional media and then are in some way co-opted or brought into by traditional media, and that's more reflective of where the money is right now rather than as a long-term trend. But more and more we'll see things sort of flow the other way.
But CBC has, on their website now, they've got different four elected provinces' websites. They've got the comment section where people can go in and provide comments. And, I just started on Twitter, and now I get Twitter feeds from all the four provinces, the outlets of CBC. So there's that. They seem to be...
The other slides I haven't done yet.
I'm sorry.
No, that's fine, because we're down to almost like 15 minutes left. So, what's happening, like I've described the basic frameworks of a fairly coarse network, not fine-grained and not as reactive, so, maybe once an hour, that kind of network. But now we are getting technologies that are making a more and more fine-grained network.
Just on that point, I'll quickly add that even though we're about to lay off 400 people, we're actually adding staff to our webpage and IT firm.
And that doesn't surprise me, because that really is, the revenues are really unclear and ambiguous and scattered all over the place, but that is where the revenues will be. So, aggregating... This is almost passé now with readers, but again, talking about how to find things, Technorati is an aggregation site. What Technorati does or tries to do is to read every single blog RSS feed that's out there and bring them together. And it's kind of neat because if you do that, you can find out who's linking to who. Because, it's a network, right? Bloggers link to each other. And so Technorati, they read everybody's blog and they can find out who has been linked to most often and what stories have been linked to most often. It's not going to be up to the minute, but it's going to be close to up to the hour. So what's happening in blogs right now, rising news stories by attention, for example. So let's see. What's news in the world of blogs? Apple building into chip design, that is a big news. This news is totally different from your news, right? This news is the news that's happening out there in the blogosphere, happening out there in the community, which is very different from what's happening in politics, what's happening in, there's overlap. Congress approves Obama's budget, da-da-da-da. There's lots of Obama stuff. Obama was huge in the blogosphere. And so on.
I'm not confused, but
okay.
Every morning I go through the Chronicle Herald because I like to get the paper, and sure. I know, it's people work hard behind it, and after that, I take all my emails from work, and then my emails from friends on the personal email.
Right.
And then I go to Facebook, and then I'm on LinkedIn, and now Twitter.
Right.
So there's so many things like the blog, and so should we? I'll have to make some choice because after 6, I still work up until 8 in front of my computer, and I've been in front of it since 8 in the morning. So It's not, no, I don't want my life to be in front of my computer all the time. So.
Yeah, and everybody is in the same boat. They have to make changes, they have to make choices, and some information sources drop.
Well, absolutely. What's the best way to, is it build your own RSS feed? Is it to use Technorati? Is it bookmarks on your browser? What's the best way to get crap that he wants to change?
No, totally. I use RSS. That's what I use. That's why I put it up front first, because all of this other stuff feeds into RSS. Take Technorati, which is searching every blog. One of the things that I do is I search in Technorati for me. Now, I'm not trying to find stuff and nothing happens. Don't do that. There we go. So this is recent stuff about me, and then this search I subscribe to, because it has an RSS feed. Technorati's being slow, so we'll just pop back over to Google Reader, because I've already subscribed to it. So, oops, nothing new there. Okay, I must have looked at it this morning. Oops. So we go down here. Oops. Where
are we? What does RSS stand for?
That's a matter of some dispute.
This is why we have such a hard time with this
world. Yeah. Technorati. So there's my RSS feed of Technorati. Originally, it stood for Rich Site Summary when it was originally created by Netscape in 96, 97. Then they improved it, and it became called RDF Site Summary, where RDF stands for Resource Description Format. And then RSS 2.0 came along by a guy called Dave Weiner, and it became called Really Simple Syndication. And then there were too many versions of it, so a group of programmers decided to create the one version that would rule all, and so now there's another version, and it's called Atom.
Oh, that was a ring that ruled it all.
Yeah.
This is probably not the appropriate time, but it is just time to be quiet. But the internet is like the woods. It's full of trees when it comes to finding out everything about what's going on in the world.
Yep.
When the meteorite's coming, you know, and what Apple is building.
Yep.
But what's very important to newspapers and television and radio is it's becoming increasingly easy for people sitting in Timbuktu to find out when the meteorite's coming.
Right.
All that kind of stuff. But they don't know when the Lions Club's Saturday picnic is being held. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And this is where I think the strength of newspapers always started global, and they're evolving back to even more local. But this really local content, and I find the web is, and I use it for to find out things. Mm-hmm. But when I want to find out what's going on local, I think that is a great strength for
media.
And that's why we're not all registered with our.
That's why you're still reading the
Herald. Exactly, because I like the community event. It's good to know what Obama is doing and what happened in Africa, but I want to know what's going on in my backyard and what's going on Saturday in Halifax and or Truro or anywhere else. Otherwise, this is not going to tell me unless I do another search, and I don't want to do another search.
But I think you can. It's not necessarily about being aware of every single tree in the forest or knowing every single thing that's going on in the world all at one time. If your idea from your newspaper, if you have the information about the local bingo, and now people's consumption habits change, whereby they're using Twitter as often as they're using the newspaper. Well, if you put out on your Twitter feed that the bingo is happening, then they're that much more likely to follow that Twitter back to your newspaper. Everything else that you want to tell
people. Twitter is local news, and it's actually hyper local because it's specific to you. You can search through Twitter, you subscribe to Twitter. Similarly, and I know it's an old dodge, right? We'll go to Facebook, the old stodgy Facebook that was invented, what, 3 years ago?
359 in your inbox.
Yeah, whatever. I went over 1,000 just recently. So here's Moncton now. Actually, we'll go to the Moncton group, which has 1,000 and some odd members. And that's people I know, people I don't know. They're just people from Moncton who are on Facebook. And now it's the members. And this is hyper-local news. So I can subscribe to this as well, right? See, this is why I use RSS, right? So this is the Moncton group from Facebook. So all the local stuff from Moncton. And it's going to be slow, so maybe I'm not going to subscribe to it at the moment. But I can subscribe to that in my RSS feed. And read that with my morning coffee.
Do you have in your regional media any stats in terms of what the 14 to 24 are doing? Age, are they?
Interesting, 14 to 24.
Not watching us.
They're texting saying, I'm going down the street now. What are you doing?
No, but I'm thinking if 10 years down the road.
That's the key group, right? My grandchildren. What kind of shoe cone they're going to.
But
Steve, the thing is, I don't know if the others want this as well, but I'm not looking so much for the tree in the forest, but the door to knock on, how to get in through the door, because I have to find the person who knows the victim that died in the helicopter crash.
Right.
And I have to find him within 2 hours or an hour, and I have to get
why?
Because I need to interview that person. So I need to. And I need photographs.
Why?
Because that's what I do.
But why not let that person tweet it for themselves?
But
the other people.
Well, they might very well, but all I'm saying is I need to knock on the door. I need to say, hi, I'm a reporter. Mm-hmm. May I speak to you? And I need to be able to get to them. So how do I knock on the door quickly with Twitter and with Facebook?
Well, with Twitter, it'll come to you, right? And there's a variety of ways it'll come to you. It may come to you through a feed, it may come to you through a friend feed. If you've heard about a helicopter crash, then you just search Twitter, you'll search helicopter crash Moncton. It may come that way.
Forgive me, Glenn, but I think this phones in on your question. Recently, there was the plane in Canada that was sort of hijacking down in the Caribbean. And I know we were curious, and I'm sure they were in St. John's too, were there any island, PEI islanders?
Sure, on the plane, yeah.
And I think that's what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly.
You want to find out if there's anybody out there that's tweeting or Facebooking that we can say, okay, there's an islander, let's try to get a hold of
them.
But you see, what should happen, and again, this is more than just social media, what should happen is the passenger list for that airplane should be available online somewhere. Mm-hmm. And that's how you find out. Now, that's not necessarily the case at the moment, but we are moving ever so gradually, with many institutions kicking and screaming, into a more open information environment generally.
I think you can use as an example the Cougar helicopter crash off St. John's a couple months ago.
Mm-hmm.
The Twitters and the they beat the socks off us in the CBC in terms of the human side of the story and connectedness and empathy and revealing information stuff that we'd go, oh my God, look, that's a name, that's a fact, that's something I'd love to have on the
And so easy to follow.
Really.
But
we
set that search for. But is it real? Is this information?
Well, yeah, exactly.
You know,
it's as real as an interview.
And does a heartfelt memorial or something and says, my brother.
It was a very good example, very clear, strong example that no doubt in my mind we got the pants beat off us for 3 or 4 days in a row. And the most important angle of the story, which was the human emotional angle of grief and just what happened and who's dead and what do we feel about that, and the connectedness as communities. And that's normally what the media does when it's working well. And we tried, we did our best, we did well, we got a lot of first few days they did better.
But with the really basic stuff though, in the first few days, I mean, we before the first day was over, we have a whole passenger manifest from Facebook. Like you say, you don't necessarily, you know, shoot it and publish it right away, because this is obviously stuff that you can't necessarily confirm. It was helpful to us then in the coming days. I mean, we got off to a much, you know, quicker start with contacting family members and blah, blah, blah than we ever would have if we weren't able to use that tool to get those names.
We were constrained by good taste, community values, this and that, and double checking, and all that stuff constrained us, and essentially got beaten.
But that's okay.
Maybe. I don't want to put something up that's not right.
Obviously, some people in news services are more comfortable than others. I'm behind in time, so I'm looking for a cheat list.
Yeah. Well, and this slide shows the cheat list. Or the best cheat list I could put together today. I've got 1 minute, probably less than that. So I'll just give you the rest of the slides. It will be on my website along with this audio, so you can always go back and review it later, and there are links. But before I do that, the reason why I do these talks, because I don't get paid for them, but things always come up. So the thing that I get out of this, there's the forest, there's all that information. Typically, when we're getting to something, we're looking for a tree, but that's changed. What we're looking for now, and the skills are like this too, finding that path through the forest. Where I work, across the street, there's a great big forest, and I can walk out into that forest, and I'm sure any of you guys could too, because you're all Canadians. You walk out in that forest, and you're just walking around, you know where the path is, right? I assume, anyways. If those of you who have been in the forest, you know what I mean. You know where the path is. You're just walking through the forest. You can see the path there. You take somebody who was raised in New York, they see nothing. Right? It's trees, bushes, shrubs, scary noises, whatever. Right? You see a path there as clear as day, and that's what you're following. That's what this stuff is. Getting a handle on social networking, you're not going to get it from me giving you an hour and a half talk. You actually have to use these applications, write your blog posts, tweet your tweets, etc. And that is actually like getting into the forest and walking around. And as you gain experience, you learn through time to see that path. So, TechnoRowdy, I have a feed from TechnoRowdy. That's what I use TechnoRowdy for. I sometimes search TechnoRowdy for specific topics. If I was going to write something on swine flu, I probably wouldn't, because it's so topical. Being done to death. Again, the point, right? Everybody's writing about swine flu today. Media is changing. Not everybody in the world wants to hear about swine flu, at least not 40, 50 times. Anyhow, aside. But if I was writing an article on swine flu, I'd probably type swine flu in TechnoRowdy and see what people are saying there. Alerts, somebody mentioned alerts. Alerts are fabulous. Again, I have an alert set up for myself, because the best way for me to find out about things that are interesting to me is to find people who are talking about me, because they're probably interested in the same things I am. So I have an alert set up to myself. I also have alerts set up for things like e-learning, online learning, learning in general, media, whatever. If I was covering Moncton, I'd have alerts out for major Moncton topics, Moncton being among them. There's Google Alerts, which is the most popular. There's also a wide number of other alerts, and you can find a whole list in alerts.com. Bookmarking. What's really important about this is everybody has their own their own bookmarks in their browser. Social bookmarking is where you bookmark on an application like Delicious, and you're sharing your bookmarks with the world. And what's interesting here is you get a phenomenon called tagging. What happens here is you bookmark something and then you type one or two words that are appropriate and relevant to that bookmark. Those are called tags. You don't use an approved vocabulary or any sort of central mechanism. You just pick a word. And what happens is these words, when they're used by hundreds, thousands of people, they tend to cluster and those clusters give you an alternative way of finding information that may be relevant to you. You can follow that tag cloud path, to mix metaphors. Photos, I mentioned Flickr. Again, you get out of it what you put into it. If you put up your own photos on Flickr, if you're not taking photos, you should be. Why not? It's easy, it's cheap. Post them to Flickr. They don't need to be expert. They just need to be, well, there. Give them some tags. Join some Flickr groups. I belong to a group that's a photo a day. It has nothing to do with my work, but I get more out of that photo a day thing. And the idea is to take a photo every day and I post it. So Flickr is wonderful for that. So recently I've been photographing, flowers from trees. Neat thing about photography too is you do it, you do it, you do it, you get better at it, as I'm sure you know. So I belong to a group, like I say, that is, why aren't my group, oh, I must not have tagged this yet. Here we go. This is a group of people from all over the place, including somebody in Moncton, which kind of surprised me, who take a photo a day and post it. There are so many different groups and things on Flickr. And then, of course, you could find stuff, your local news on Moncton. And if you don't like that search, and I don't really, there are better Flickr searches out there. Oh, dang. It's not there. It's in my newsletter. This Flickr image search tool. I like this Flickr image search tool because it allows me to filter, well, when it shows up, it allows me to filter the search results by the licensing as well as by the content. That's going to take too long to come up.
As in you can pick open source or open free, use it if you want.
Exactly. That's exactly it.
What's the DPI quality? How large are these files?
It varies. It's across the board. Whatever digital cameras are producing these days, I'm running images now that are like 2,000 or some odd pixels wide. DPI, of course, can always be adjusted by your photo editing software. So if I wanted, so typically they'll show up on the screen at 70 because that's the standard for internet, but you can bring them down to a publication, in which case my image would actually be maybe about yay wide in your magazine.
But they're not generally, again, mainstream. We would want bigger. We would want full Mac Daddy so it would reproduce nicely, not the thumbnail, not the small.
Oh, yeah, no. Well, I mean.
And the ability to use it.
Yeah, so well, you need the ability to use it. There's that search, but well, you can steal mine. I don't care. my lawyer. Who can afford lawyers?
So if you're a member of Flickr, you have the option of downloading the original photo.
Yes.
The 8 pixels or whatever.
It's not perfectly in focus. Sorry about that. Usually they're better, but that should be big enough for you to use. It's whatever cameras are producing these days, and that's constantly increasing. This is a 12 megapixel. I'm very sensitive of the time. So video, same thing. Oops, dang, that's not what I meant. You know, and YouTube, again, has all of these networks and connections and social networking services properly, all of these networks and connections. And I showed you the Facebook group with 1,000 and some odd people from Moncton. And there's the thing about it, it's 1,000 and some odd sources of Moncton information that the paper could be using and probably isn't. Messaging, and this is the Twitter. A couple of things to point out here, people use hashtags to identify specific events. So in the case of a helicopter crash, you'll probably find that people started using the hashtag like helicopter crash or maybe something a little more specific, and that would connect all of the Twitter posts around that subject. Also, people talked back and forth to each other on Twitter using the at symbol. So if somebody had Twitter and they wanted to send something that they knew I would find, they would go at Downs, that's my idea of Twitter, at Downs, and then whatever their message was. And me, when I use Twitter, I go in and I search with Twitter. Well, I log in first. For some reason, I've been logged out.
Do you use the same password for everything? Maybe you have a lot of passwords.
Yes and no. You have to mix it up, right? But nobody can remember 200 passwords. So I have a set that I rotate through. So if I search, now if I search for at Downs, I will find, and they're not frequent, but I'll find things that are specifically addressed to me by other people posting on Twitter. And the sort of thing you'll never find in the local paper. That's me with my flip cam, and out there on the internet is a video, that's my bicycle, of me out on the trail. Anyhow.
Is there a crash? No crash.
There's no crash, but there is a flat tire on the train.
Better TV if there's a crash.
Yeah, journalists, I should have known. Skype, if you're using the telephone anymore, who's paying long distance? Internet Explorer users are paying long distance. Sorry. Collaboration. I use Google Docs to co-author papers with people who are scattered around the world. We both access the same document and work on it at the same time, which is really useful. None of this sending versions back and forth. We can work on spreadsheets or whatever as well. Zoho is another company that does the same thing.
I want to stay on top of the edge, maybe they subscribe to your music. You know, because what you're telling us this month is probably there's going to be a new Soho.
Yeah, there's a friend feed, which I've just started working with this week, which would probably next week make it into this presentation, probably. It looks like it's going to be pretty robust. But not, you see, the thing is, the edge, right? It's a circle, right? The edge is different places for different people. If you're a tech head, sign up to a site like Tech Dirt. If you're into social media, sign up to a site like Mashable. If you're into new media, learning, and knowledge, sign up to my site. You know, I mean, it really varies. But again, this is the path that you see in the forest, right? You'll eventually gravitate to those sites that are on the edge because they'll be what other people are gravitating to you to. And if you're sufficiently well connected, your network will actually pull you to those places. I'm a little bit over time, so I am going to conclude on that note. And I really appreciate you coming out here on a Saturday morning and listening to this, and I hope you found it to be useful and of value. And we'll say goodbye to everybody on audio. Thanks for listening. It took an hour and 43 minutes, and that's a lot of your time, so I appreciate that.